reflection of God clarifies our faith, the source of which is in our own freedom. But to believe is not to see. God remains in the distance and remains a question. This is really what he wants you to take away from these two chapters of the comprehensive and the chapter on the idea of God, is that you start with something like a table, you start with something like a pancake, and you really research it, and you really get to know it, and you just keep digging and digging and digging, and that pushes you out into this experience, or get into this, in one sense, into this intimation of the comprehensive, the possibility of the comprehensive. Having gotten to the possibility of the comprehensive, you now have the possibility of an experience of freedom that is so radical, it will defy full expression because it's freedom. If it were everyday experience, it would be expressible. Okay? God remains in the distance and remains a question. To live by God does not mean to base oneself on calculable knowledge, but to live as though we staked our existence on the assumption that God is. What does he mean here now? He's challenging all religious expression that would treat the concept, the idea of God, as though it is rational, calculable knowledge. Okay? And he's asking people to actually do this, to not put, it's a strange kind of way of thinking about this, I think, for a lot of people, whether you're Abrahamic or Hindu. You know, Abrahamic would be Judaism, Christianity, Islam. Or you're Hindu, or you're Buddhist, or you're Taoist, whatever the case may be. The idea here would be to base oneself, does not mean to base oneself on calculable knowledge, on demonstrable proofs, right? But to live as though we staked our existence on the assumption that God is, to live as though we staked our existence on the possibility of God, not on the surety, certainty, this is just like 1 + 1 = 2 of God. The God of faith is the distant God, the hidden God, the indemonstrable God. Hence, I must recognize not only that I do not know God, right? The way I would say I know that 1 + 1 = 2, that I do not know God, but even that I do not know whether I believe. Now, okay, what? Obviously, Alex has every reason to be confused. Everyone has every reason to be confused in what is being said here. Faith is no possession. John, what does he mean when he says this? Faith is no possession. What do you possess?
Exactly.
Well, what do you possess? You possess what? But okay. What do you have in your pockets? Okay, and you have your skateboard and your books. You possess things.
But you're saying you can't possess the belief.
You can't possess a belief, like you've gotten a hold of an object and you say, now I have it. Right? And this is actually goes directly to the heart of something that's been occurring since people first started talking about the gods thousands of years ago in probably pre-recorded history. There have always been people who act like they can say, I have possession of God. I know what God wants. Yes, Sophia.
So you're saying that
or even of an idea. So you start with the physical and you're like, okay, I possess these things. But then knowledge itself is a kind of thing, right? So like the ability to add is a knowledge. That's a thing you possess. The ability to talk is a thing you possess. And what goes along over the course of history is that there are all of these people who say that they possess knowledge of God. I know what God wants. I know what God is. Right? So every step along the way, Jaspers is trying to undercut God as anything, God, faith in God, the idea of God, as anything other than a pure possibility. Okay? So then he said, so that's why he says something that seems kind of, to me, I remember the first time I read this, I was like, what? Hence I must recognize not only that I do not know God, but even that I do not know whether I believe. Even my own belief, even my own faith, cannot be a piece of knowledge that I possess if it's actually from the source of my radical freedom. It can't be something that I know that I have. So that I'm always, in one sense, faith in Jaspers' way of thinking about this, faith is always an opportunity for doubt, which is certainly not the way that we normally think about faith, the way that we're taught to think about faith. You just have to have faith. Right? You just have to have faith. Notice the word preceding faith. You have to have faith as though you can possess it like a thing. And Jaspers is saying, no, you can never, it's not a possession. You don't have faith. You live faith. Faith is a way of life, but it's a way of life that constantly gives itself over to doubt because you never know if you actually are in faith. If you actually are practicing faith. It confers, why? Because it confers no secure knowledge. You remember that first time that you were a kid and you started reading? Right? You remember that much? I remember. But, you know, I'm weird. I remember when I started reading. I was 3 years old. But it was something I was not good at. And then by the time I was 5, I'd gotten a little bit better at it, but I still couldn't, like, you know, I wasn't really getting it. I remember this, I remember in bits and pieces. But then, and I brought this up one time before, I think, then I got my little book when I was in first grade from Mrs. Willis, Tip the Dog, and I started reading it, and I was reading through it, and I got to the end of it, and I started reading something else. Okay. And then I read something else. And then it got easier and easier and easier because I have the knowledge of reading. Right? It's something I have, and it's something I can teach somebody else. Okay. Faith is never easy. Because faith is not something you know you have. Faith is something that always calls you back into question, as Jaspers thinks here. Thus, the believer lives in the enduring ambiguity of the objective. And what he means here, in the enduring ambiguity of the practice, in enduring willingness to hear. Right? To be ready to listen. Okay? He listens patiently, and yet he is unswerving in his resolve. In the cloak of weakness, she is strong. She is open, though in her real life, she is resolute. That's Dow 78, right? In the cloak of weakness, she is strong. She is open,
though in her real life, she is resolute. Okay? I don't know. And then he tells us, reflection on God is typical of all significant philosophical thought. There are probably some people who would argue with that. It does not bring secure knowledge, but to authentic selfhood, it gives a free area for decision. The whole emphasis is on love in the world. Okay. So, this is kind of what happens in one sense between these two chapters. All right? The comprehensive starts with your situation, your ultimate situations. Okay? And it leads to doubt. I don't really know pancakes. I thought I knew pancakes. But I've never really known pancakes. I've never eaten pancakes. I've consumed pancakes. What does it mean to be with a pancake? It leads me to doubt. Ultimate situations, your situations, lead you to doubt. Doubt brings about a kind of wonder. Wonder leads to knowledge. But knowledge, which apparently has something to do with certainty,